cameras decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, hello, and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. My name is Danny, and I'm joined with
Laurie.
That's correct. And today, so this is actually based, well, not is based, but the movie is based on the story. And funnily enough, I remember us watching this trailer one day when you were at my house, and we never actually watched the movie. But it is based off of the story, which I actually didn't know. Let me tell you the title, and I'll see if you remember it. It was called Killers of the Flower Moon. That Leonardo DiCaprio in...
I'm not quite sure, to be honest with you. I'm not quite sure if I remember that. You're speaking about the only movie that I can picture that we watched about killers. I'm not sure if it's...
No, we didn't watch a movie. We just watched the trailer.
Oh, we watched the trailer. Okay, then I probably don't know.
We were looking for something to watch, and this popped up, and I remember we watched it, and we did say it looked interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I found out that it is actually based off of a real life story, and it's actually quite... I'm surprised I didn't know about the story before, if that makes sense. Like, it's one of those ones where you feel like they would be general knowledge questions, you know, like random facts you just know. Well, I didn't know this. Well, anyway, so this was so the movie, right, is based off of a tragedy which befell the Osage Nation in the early 20th century, so like 1907, so way back when white settlers were scheming to tap into the wealth of the Native American nation's oil-rich lands in Oklahoma and conspired to murder dozens of members of their community. So basically, the Osage people had land, and it was rich with oil reserves, and the white people who came to that area were like, they wanted it, and so they actually conspired to kill a whole bunch of people in order to get it for themselves. So it's kind of like, I don't want to say a massacre, but it was a organized front, if I can put it that way. So Killers of the Flower Moon is based on David Grand's 2017 nonfiction book of the same name. It explores the culture killing and systematic erasure that enabled the white settlers and federal government to not only dispose the Osage people of their land, but also terrorize the families who had the head rights for the lucrative oil profits. This period of horrific, bloody history was adaptly being called the Reign of Terror. So it was quite a brutal time in history. Just a fun fact, there was also a period of time in France called the Reign of Terror right after the French Revolution, when they killed King Louis. Things just got very messy very fast, but the French are very dramatic. So anyway, so Grand, the author, told the Smithsonian magazine, and I quote, "I thought I was writing a book about a singular evil figure who had been apprehended by the FBI. Instead, I began to realize that this was less of a story about who did it, and instead of one of who didn't do it. It was really about a culture of killing and a culture of complicity, with many of these murders carried out by individuals who were profiting from this very corrupt system of targeting the Osage after marrying into their families and then plotting to kill them to steal their oil money and inheritance." That's madness.
For real.
Like,
that's crazy.
Like, that's you marrying me and like then killing me for my inheritance. Like, that's madness. What is that? Like, that's crazy. And it was a thing. Like, it wasn't just, like he said, it wasn't just a one person thing. This was like a people. Okay, like, you know, when you have your friend has an idea and you decide to copy the idea.
Yeah.
It was like that. So in the late 19th century, the Osage Nation became one of the only Native American nations to buy its own reservation, which was settled in northwest Oklahoma after the U.S. federal government and white settlers forced the tribe to leave their ancestral homelands, which included what is now modern-day Arkansas, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, and Oklahoma. The Osage people legally purchased a 1.5 million acres of land.
That's crazy.
I know, that's massive.
Yep.
It's now actually called the Osage County of Oklahoma. And it limited the government's power to divide tribal lands into allotments and sell surplus land parcels to white settlers as allowed under the 1887 Dawes Act. So basically, they bought their own land. They're like, this is our piece of land. We're going to do what we want with it.
Yeah.
Instead, Osage Chief James Bighart was able to negotiate with the Illinois Senator John Palmer for the head rights, or the share of profits from oils, coals, and minerals extracted from the land of 657 acres to be given only to full-blooded Osage people. Okay, so like you had to be pure as pure blood over there.
Yeah.
In essence, this meant only Osage people collectively owned the rights for the minerals, no matter who technically owned the land the minerals were found on. It's quite a clever concept. As NPR explains, to divvy up the profits from the collectively owned mineral rights, a new system was put in place. Each of the 2,229 Osage members on the tribal rolls in 1907 was given an equal share of money coming in. That would come to be called a head right. Private companies would lease land from the tribe in order to extract oils, gas, gravel, or coal, and then pay them a percentage of what they made into a trust managed by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The BIA, in turn, would distribute payments from the trust to the head right holders. Makes sense, right? So basically, they had land, they leased it out. If I have land, I lease it out to Glory. Glory then finds some gold, I don't know, and I get some of the profits, and then it gets paid out evenly and fairly.
So is this within the grounds that from the people that leased the land out, they knew that there was gold there?
Yeah, so like if you, I mean, they, okay, obviously not gold, but in those days, like they, I think they listed oil, gravel, gas, whatever they were looking for. If you knew my land had, you could come to me and like, can I lease it from you? Because the Osage people might not necessarily have had the equipment or the skills to do it themselves.
Fair enough.
Makes sense. So you could rent out this land for me, from me, get the oil or gas or whatever, and then once you sell it, I get a percentage of that profit, which does make sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, if you're leasing out land, you have to pay to lease the land, plus you're getting a percentage. It does sound like a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
In the 1890s, large reserves of crude oil were discovered under the land that made up this Osage Reservation, which benefited the community exponentially. Royalty revenue from the oil production made the Osage the wealthiest people in the world per capita. The riches, however, also soon attracted the attention of non-natives looking to cash in. Now, of course, we always know greed is a very sneaky and evil motive for things, and this obviously is what took place. They now like, okay, they are literally sitting on a gold mine. We want in. And it's unfortunate that the we want in ended in a bloodbath, but let's get into that. So in 1906, Congress passed the Osage Allotment Act, which directed the inheritance of head rights to a deceased's legal heir, even if the heir was not Osage. So remember in the beginning, they said in order to have this land, you had to be full blood, like no mixing, nothing, full blooded. I am an Osage person. Okay. And this, now that they said, no, okay, let's say an Osage and a white settler got married and they had a kid, the kid would be mixed. The kid could still get the land rights, which is what originally he wouldn't have had that or been allowed to do that. Now, this opened up a door for a very murderous scheme to take place and resulted in a string of mysterious killings over the course of a few years during the early 1920s. The streak of violence took the lives of at least 24 Osage members, though historians speculate the true number of victims is much higher. I wouldn't be surprised if it's much higher. The killings, many of which were plotted by white settlers who had married or integrated themselves into the Osage community. So you see, because now they have a chance to get that inheritance. Okay, were part of a plot to eliminate native head rights holders and inheritors as orchestrated by cattleman William Hale. And that is who actually the movie is based on. Okay, most of the victims were wealthy Osage men and women who were executed by gun, poison, or even bombings. So they really went for it.
Yeah.
In the mid-1920s, the Osage delegation traveled to Washington, D.C., to lobby the federal government to investigate the deaths. The delegation also brought up issues with the court-appointed white guardians assigned to the Osage adults by the government. These were supposed to help the community members manage their finances, but in reality worked more like a racist ploy to undermine the native autonomy and enabled white guardians to swindle the Osage out of their own money. Okay, so basically people were appointed and they were helping, like, you know, like an investment banker is helping you. And in fact, they're the person stealing your money type of vibe. And I quote, "We paid at that time in the 20s, $20,000 to hire the FBI to find the killers of our people." I'm sorry, why are we paying the FBI? Aren't they supposed to find killers? Isn't that not their job description?
Yeah, it's quite interesting.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, why as a people are they having to, it's like going to the cops and the cops are like, okay, for me to solve your wife's murder, you have to pay 10,000 rand. So it wasn't like
a motivation to be like, please get this done soon.
It could have been. It could have been. Or they weren't helping unless they paid. That's more likely what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Specifically because these were Native Americans. They were not white people in a very racist society of that time. Osage businesswoman Denate Daniels recalled to the Oklahoma in 2021. And a big part of the scandals are these guardianships. So white business owners, the well-to-dos of the town, had these guardianships of the Osage people. A lot of Osage people were given a $20 allowance and then the white guardians took the rest of the money.
Hmm.
And if you're mining oil, your salary should not be $20. Ernest was William Hale's nephew and his wife was named Molly. So Molly was an Osage woman who married William Hale's nephew Ernest. Ernest and his younger brother Brian ended up being instrumental in the killing of Molly's mother and three sisters. Anna, whose decomposing body was discovered in a ravine. Imagine being chucked off a ravine. Rita, who died when her house was bombed, and Minnie and Mom Lizzie, whose deaths were ruled to be a result of suspicious illness, so most likely poison. Unbeknownst to Molly, Ernest had actually begun to slowly poison her as well. She initially stood by her husband when he was accused by the investigators of playing a role in the killings, but when Ernest eventually confessed to the crimes, Molly divorced him. Well, I would hope so. He killed your sisters and your mother. It's looking a little bit shady over there, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
She successfully sued to end her guardianship in 1931, thus returning full control of her family's wealth, in spite of Ernest's violent scheme to steal it from her. Molly went on to remarry and died at 50 in 1937. The couple's granddaughter, Margie Buckhurt, reflected on Ernest's violent legacy in an interview with People, and she said, "I have a lot of anger towards him. He took away my whole family. He took away potential cousins. I don't have any relatives on my Osage side." So this story of Molly and Ernest was a common story for the Osage people.
Yeah.
He married her, then tried to kill her and her family off in order to get her money.
Her money, that's crazy.
Right. Ernest and William were arrested in 1926 for the murders of Molly's sister, so at least there was some justice. Rita and her husband, Bill Smith. According to Grant's book, Ernest confessed to his roles in the murder plots upon hearing that outlaw Blackie Thompson, that's a name and a half, Blackie Thompson, I don't think that's his real name, but it's fine.
Yeah, probably not.
Was willing to testify that Ernest had hired him for the killings. Oh, it's most likely a name. Like, you know, like assassin names, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The trials captivated the American public with the case breathlessly reported and followed in newspapers across the country. Ernest ultimately pled guilty and testified against his uncle. He received a life sentence in prison, though he was granted parole in 1937. He returned to prison after robbing a bank. Oh my goodness, this guy really can't just get an honest living. Though he was bank and thereafter released in 1959. Oklahoma Governor Henry Bellmon granted him a full pardon in 1965 and Ernest died at 94 in 1986. Meanwhile, William was also sentenced to life in prison and served 18 years at Kansas's Leavenworth Penitentiary before being granted parole in 1947, and he died at 87 in 1962. So, yeah, basically, it was quite eye-opening to find out this type of thing happened. I mean, think about it. You're lucky enough that your people have landed or settled on a land that is wealthy. And now, and their system worked. They actually, if you look at what they were doing and how they initially had set it up, they should have been a very wealthy community.
Yeah.
And they should have flourished. But you had people come in who were greedy and wanted it for themselves and changed up things and ultimately committed horrible acts of violence. And that's why I was saying it's such a surprise that I didn't know about this before, because like we said, it wasn't just one man killing his family. It was happening all the time, everywhere within this community, which is really sad, because at the end of the day, lots of people's lost their lives over what? Oil.
Yeah, it's also quite interesting to think about, because I mean, looking at it from all perspectives, like the worst that they could have done, like at least they could have been considerate and maybe try to form genuine connection with the people, the Osage people, and join their families. But to go as far as killing
to kill
them
I
and
mean,
eliminating them to get their resources.
Never, I mean, in my opinion, if you're going in with that mindset, I don't see how he ever could have married Molly for love at all. Like, you've got such a hidden agenda and motive behind what you're doing. I mean, that's disgusting.
Very much
like,
so.
That is completely using people, and especially actually using women, because most of the, it wasn't women marrying Osage guys. It was men marrying Osage women.
Osage women.
It was a huge tragedy for women of their culture and their community. And I'm glad Molly got her rights back and she got her inheritance and her wealth back. But I'm pretty sure that was not the story for many of the people within the community. And so, yeah, this was a tragic story. It's a tragic story. It's a tragic part of the US history. And so, yeah, I was, like I said, I was quite blown away that it's not something that's more spoken about.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? And I think, I do also believe the only reason they had to go this route, because I mean, let's be honest, if you had come when people came to South Africa and they found that there was gold, they just took over and because they could. But I think what made it different in America is there was a set system set up. The Osage people had bought the land. It was a very different story over there. So that this was then their new way of coming in and stealing it from like within. You know, what's it called? Breaking it down from within.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is the Osage murders. Very tragic story. But do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Nope.
Nothing? Treasure?
Nothing.
All right then. Well, we will see you same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.